This is the Popmatic Podcast for May 11th, 2016.
Hacking her was simple. Her password, Dylan2791.
This is the Popmatic Podcast coming to you from Studio NPL in the heart of downtown Nashville. This is where you can rock out with your library card out. I'm Brian, and joining me today are...
Mike.
Amanda.
Bill.
Juice Privacy Week is an initiative that invites library users into a national conversation about privacy rights in the digital age. Woo! Now, Juice Privacy Week was actually last week.
Aww, oh, sad face.
Wow.
It was too private. We didn't know about it.
We're going to set up a reminder.
But you can choose privacy all year. Two of the library's core values are embodied in Choose Privacy Week: intellectual freedom and lifelong learning. You can't have intellectual freedom if you think you're being surveilled. And also, whether we like it or not, the business of life happens on the internet. So knowing how the internet works is very helpful and empowering. And as they say in G.I. Joe, now you know, and knowing's half the battle.
G.I. Joe.
So this week, privacy, or perhaps lack thereof.
Ryan.
Can you do a cold open?
Maybe.
We'll find out.
So frosty. For our privacy episode, I was going to recommend one of my favorite TV series of all time, The Prisoner. But I'm still recovering from seeing Ghost last night. Three hours of sleep. One of my ears may be permanently damaged. My throat is still kind of hoarse from yelling, Hail Satan! So I don't think I really have to be doing the series justice.
Ghost the band, not Ghost the movie.
Yes, I stayed up all night watching the sensual pottery skills of Patrick Swayze and Demi Moore.
Just clarifying for the rest of us.
Yeah, the ending of the movie is super creepy when they like pull that dude in the shadows and stuff. That was awesome. Anywho.
Anyway, that was the concert, not the movie.
Yes. I watched Vincent Schiappelli be a creepy bum for 2 hours, which wouldn't do justice to the series, I think. So, besides, every time I keep trying to think of a concluding paragraph, it just turns into rants about how disappointed I am in television dramas, and nobody wants to hear Cranky Pants McCrazy Train again, babbling about how all forms of media should be more like books. So instead, I'm going to be recommending instead of recommending something that Jeremy has recommended before, I'm going to recommend something that Brian has recommended before.
Yeah, that's good. Touch me. Good job. A+.
We threw Jeremy in the closet anyway. Yeah, exactly.
Jeremy's not here today.
That's right.
After that, the whole Michael Jackson thing last week. What was that about?
We threw down.
We exiled him with one glove.
Oh, off with you.
Go listen to, Thriller on Infinite Repeat.
No parallels at all between Michael Jackson and Prince, by the way.
Yes, seriously. Yeah.
Citizen 4 is a documentary from 2014 about Edward Snowden's initial leaks to the media, set mostly in that one hotel room in Hong Kong in 2013.
Laura, at this stage, I can offer nothing more than my word. I am a senior government employee in the intelligence community. I hope you understand that contacting you is extremely high risk. For now, know that every border you cross, every purchase you make, every call you dial, every cell phone tower you pass, friend you keep, site you visit, and subject line you type is in the hands of a system whose reach is unlimited, but whose safeguards are not. In the end, if you publish the source material, I will likely be immediately implicated. I ask only that you ensure this information makes it home to the American public. Thank you, and be careful. Citizen 4.
So I don't know anything about you.
Okay. I work for... My name is Edward Snowden. I go by Ed. Edward Joseph Snowden's the full name.
I think it's interesting that in addition to journalist Glenn Greenwald and Ewan McCaskill, whose articles would eventually reveal Snowden's revelations to the public, he also approached documentarian Laura Poitras, who is best known for a documentary called My Country, My Country, which was about the Iraq War. I've heard it's really good. It was nominated for an Oscar. Benjamin Franklin said once that those who would give up essential liberty to purchase a little temporary safety deserve neither liberty nor safety. And it turns out that that is the world that we are living in. Frankly, Citizen 4 was one of the scariest documentaries I'd ever seen, at least until I saw The Nightmare last year. Ooh. I guess because that in the interest in combating terrorism, we essentially signed away all our privacy. For instance, Snowden says that IP phones, or those phones that are connected, use an internet connection instead of the traditional phone line, are being recorded and monitored at all times, like we use at the library. Somewhere, a database is storing every conversation I've had with Susan about different casseroles we could make.
I'm kind of glad about that. I mean, if they want to do that, that's fine. Let them listen to 65 hours of my life, you know?
Can I minor incorrect? I don't think that he asserted that all of those are being recorded all the time, but he said that the microphone could be turned on remotely. And this was actually subtly mentioned whenever we switched over to IP phones. The guy from Metro IT was like, "Now, you guys, I want you to know, the microphone's really sensitive." So, like, yeah.
Finger quotes, yes, sensitive. Yes, yeah.
So if they wanted to record them, you know, they could remote, record them.
Mm, good to know.
Plus, maybe I'd hear some good casserole recipes if you listened in on your conversation.
I was thinking once that, like, if everything's being recorded, maybe in, like, the future, like, you know, intellectuals and professor types could, like, comb through and find out what normal people were like.
It's going to be like the new letter writing campaign. Like, you know, we save letters from old people, and now they're going to save, like, recorded phone calls.
Yeah.
You asked me once what my favorite episode of Star Trek The Next Generation was, and I kind of punted. But I would say it was the episode later in the show whenever Geordi recreates the engineer that made the designed the Enterprise engine. Mm-hmm. And then basically he has, like, an imaginary relationship with her. But then, you know, her hologram that he recreates is like, "Hey, buddy, not cool." That was a great episode. Okay. You know, because he recreated her from her personal logs.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool. Oh, okay. Gmail, which I use.
Back on track.
Yeah, that's right.
Sorry about that.
We're going to re-rail this derail. Man, I'm just off today. Gmail, which I use, uses international servers, and the information sent between those servers can be intercepted and monitored. It's also a creepy sequence involving a fire alarm, where a fire alarm breaks out at the hotel and Snowden freaks out because that's an easy way to get you out of the building and snatched off the street. Apparently, that's the thing. Eventually, Snowden says that the media will deflect his message and make it all about him, and it will become less about how our state is becoming more and more a creepy surveillance state and more about his personal life. The assorted journalists balk at this idea, but then eventually comes to pass. When the leaks start coming in, the media care more about, like, his fiance that he left behind, like, you know, where he went to college and all that kind of stuff, and more and less about, like, you know, how our privacy has been stolen. There are some bits where it's just chilling and kind of silly, like near the end of the film, Snowden in Russia is writing down information on scraps of paper, which the journalists are then to commit to memory and then destroy because they're being watched at all times because the government knows they're talking to him. I was just like, okay, you know, with cameras and things. He also spends a period of time during the Hong Kong hotel room phase talking to them under a bedsheet because his face could be recognized by drones, which, you know, again, it's creepy, but it's also like so weird tinfoil hat, like,
I was gonna say, you know,
like, really?
So can I also...
Oh boy, what I do wrong now?
So did you... So at one point he puts the sheet over his head and the computer because he said he doesn't want any visual confirmation of what his password is. And at the time, Greenwald and Poitras are like, "You are f-ing nuts." And by the end, Glenn Greenwald is covering up his keyboard when he types his password.
Overall, I found it amazing, kind of disturbing. I wonder if I forgot giant swaths of it because unnerved I was while watching it. Lastly, I do find it amusing that now he's doing vocal tracks on techno songs.
That would be the song Exit by Jean-Michel Jarre.
Maybe we have a link to that
article. Everyone needs a hobby.
I guess there are only so many creepy bombshell leaks that he could smuggle before he's just trying to kill time in Russia.
An interesting note of what you said about, you know, his fear about people would care about his more biography than the issue that came up. Like, the trailer for the Oliver Stone biopic has come out, right? And it's all about him, right?
Yeah, so, Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
So yeah, this is an interesting prophecy there. And I think I mentioned this before. I mean, if you love or hate Edward Snowden, or you think it's boring, or you think it's really exciting, it's a really good movie.
It's shocking because I initially didn't see it in the theater because the reviews I read of it said they're like, "Well, we know this, so who cares?" You know, and it's just kind of like boring. Like
welcome
he's just saying,
"Ever
you know,
made?"
Yeah, you know, we know it ends. Who cares? Yeah. And I was like, "Okay, fine." So I'll just wait for it to come to DVD, and it took forever to get to DVD. And then when it did, I was like, "This is riveting!" Like, why? Well, I mean, it won the best documentary Oscar. It was like really like interesting and cool, and I want to see it again.
Yeah,
it's just weird. It's
I think that Laura Poitras is a amazing, brave artist. Like, she's an amazing documentary filmmaker, and this kind of ties into what we'll talk about during Tickle My Fancy. I'm sorry that I hogged your segment.
Nah, it's okay. Apparently, my memory was way more fuzzy than I thought.
So. Okay, I hugged Brian's
in-house
last
corrections.
Week, so.
You know, we have Amanda.
Okay, so I'm going to talk about something a little different. I would consider myself a fair weather fan of the artist known as Sting.
Oh.
Every now and again, he'll put out a song that I like. For instance, I really enjoyed the album of John Dolan's songs he did that was called Songs from the Labyrinth. The library does have. Check that out if you haven't. But for me, nothing really beats the popular songs he did when he was a member of the Police. Songs like Every Breath You Take or Don't Stand So Close to Me. Now, before I go further, I need to take a brief survey. So this is audience participation. So wake up, everybody.
Oh, okay.
So, okay. I think you and I have talked about this off mic, but so what is more important when you listen to music? Song, the music, or the lyrics?
Oh, I'm more of a music guy. I don't really care about lyrics.
Yeah, the music. I mean, I like I like absolute music.
So, yeah, you're a noise music guy, so you
can enjoy
lyrics.
I can enjoy instrumentals as well as the lyric stuff.
So even my favorite like singer, songwriter, poet people, like any of their albums, even the ones that like touch my heart, half the songs I don't like, the lyrics don't speak to me, right?
But you know, at least listen to the lyrics.
Yeah, but like music, the melody is like way more universal. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, it's music. You know, if it's got a nice beat, you can dance to it. So,
yeah, see, I think I'm in the minority because I'm a lyrics girl myself. So if the music is catchy, that'll pull me in. But then I really only stay if the lyrics are good, kind of like what Brian said. They have to speak to me or it's... So
is that a technical term?
That is a technical music term.
I must have missed that in my music appreciation.
That was an advanced music thing.
Oh, okay.
That was like cool. So I love the music of the Police, but we need to take a little closer look at their lyrics. So I've got a couple excerpts here. The first one is, every breath you take, every move you make, every bond you break, every step you take, I'll be watching you.
Every breath you take.
Which, you know, is of course from the song Every Breath You Take, which is an obvious choice in a discussion about privacy. But let's dig a little deeper. Let's keep going. The next one. It's no use. He sees her. He starts to shake and cough, just like the old man in that book by Nabokov. Of course, here referencing Lolita. Don't stand. Don't stand so. Don't stand so close to me. And then the last one, I resolve to call her up 1,000 times a day and ask her if she'll marry me in some old-fashioned way.
I resolve to call her up 1,000 times a day and ask her if she'll marry me in some old-fashioned way.
Which is from Every Little Thing She Does Is Magic. So upon further inspection, it looks like Sting has no problem with the whole concept of invasion of privacy. Though the songs are catchy, and I will be guaranteed to sing along with them anytime they come on the radio, they are just a little creepy. Some of it is obviously exaggeration for dramatic effect, but I still don't want some guy watching every step I take. Now, when I first heard the song in the 80s, I was little, I thought, oh, that's so nice, because it meant that he really cared for the girl,
yeah.
You know, like...
Yeah, you know, that's like that's a big song at weddings, which is just creepy. It's like, do you listen to like the lyrics
at
all?
Yeah, I'm like, let's listen a little further. Yeah. But I thought it was like parents watching their children, you know, so they'd be like, I'm going to watch you so you don't get hurt.
No.
And so then when I grew up, that's not what he meant.
creepy stalker.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I also have to admit that if I just read the lyrics of the Police songs, I would totally not expect them to sound the way they do. The music totally lightens up the story behind the lyrics, at least to a certain extent. Now, the library still has the Police music on these round things that are called CDs, which you can check out. And if you need a hit of the jazz pop new wave ska style band, you can check one out today. And we promise not to, you know, watch every move you make while you're in the library.
Well, you know what's funny, too, about that is, like, this came up when we were talking about Love Actually. You know, the whole thing about how Andrew Lincoln's character is creepy, or the you know, the kid from American Beauty. There's this scene where, like, it works really well dramatically, but you probably wouldn't want someone to do that for you in real life. Yeah. So it, like, works in a song, but maybe not in real life.
Yeah. Right? That does sound like those, like, rom-coms. It's like, you know, guy doesn't get the girl, so he doesn't give up, and it just seems like, you know, take a hint.
At some point, no means no.
Okay. Yeah,
yeah. The reason to carry a weapon, right?
Yeah.
So, Bill.
Okay, great. I want to recommend a movie that came out in 1971, the 70s, of course.
Yeah.
Called The Anderson Tapes. This is a fast-paced thriller, which was directed by Sidney Lumet. It stars Sean Connery, Diane Cannon, Martin Balsam. And in his first movie role, Christopher Walken. In brief, Sean Connery plays Duke Anderson, who has just been released from prison, and he plans to rob an apartment building. The thing that Duke does not realize is he's being monitored through electronic surveillance, cameras, eavesdropping devices, and various tracking devices.
3:34 p.m. Unidentified male Caucasian.
House Internal Security Committee surveillance, AD 271T41.
Internal Revenue Service surveillance, Pat Angelo. Case 642DZ713.
Someone is listening. Someone is watching. Someone is listening. Someone is watching.
This guy's moving a muscle. He's got every move laid out. It's like a military operation.
He okayed the deal. We give you the money for the finance. We want 60-40.
Everyone knows it's an improbable crime. Yet Duke Anderson may pull off the impossible.
Yes? Oh, what the hell is this?
Mrs. Hathaway!
Oh, for God's sake, shut up. It's a robbery!
The bestseller that bugged the world of crime unreels its power on the screen.
The people behind the surveillance are private investigators, the DEA, FBI, and the IRS. These organizations are not watching Duke Anderson, but the people he comes in contact with so that he can pull this job on the apartment building. Crooked antique dealers, the Black Panthers, so on and so forth. These agencies know he's up to something, but they can't quite figure it out. The director, Sidney Lumet, said the theme of the movie was the machines are winning, and in my opinion, every year proves him right. Even though this movie was made in 1971, it's as relevant as it is now as it was then, and especially in post 9/11. When you ask the questions, are these organizations who are supposed to be keeping us safe, are they fully aware of what's going on? The Anderson tape shows us how bureaucratic bungling can occur all the while telling a very exciting story. Another plus to the movie is Quincy Jones' inventive score. So check out the Anderson tapes, and if you want to, our cost of privacy for so-called security. So, Ryan.
I've been meaning to watch that, and or I've heard that the book is supposed to be really good too. And that, like,
by Lawrence Sanders.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. It's supposedly the entire book is told through transcripts of him being watched the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And isn't it? I mean, it could be the book and not the movie, but isn't it like every single person in the apartment building is being monitored? And, I mean, like, I know he is, but like everybody else is too. And it's like, that's also.
I don't know. The movie didn't go into that. Okay. I got to be quite honest. I haven't read the book.
You know.
But probably so.
I just do creepy stuff. Now back away in my corner.
Brian.
I'm kind of glad that you talked about the Anderson tapes, because this whole idea between like privacy and security is like a really old debate, like in Western philosophy. It's like not something that's new. I mean, centuries.
My Benjamin Franklin quote.
Centuries, not just, decades. Not even from the 70s until now, right? So, right. I'm glad that you brought something up that was older. That didn't have something to do with Edward Snowden, right? So, even though I love that movie and talked about it before.
I was going to talk about the prisoner.
And now, of course,
this is a TV show that only Mark likes.
But I guess what I was trying to say is that what I should have said was security is really kind of an illusion.
Yeah,
I mean, that's right. You know. Yeah.
Don't feel safe, boys and girls. Yeah. We're all going to die.
That's what the society was based on the illusion that security is the thing that exists, that like if the law gets broken, we could just call a cop or something. But
as I was saying, it's an old debate, but Mike, you win because I'm going to talk about something that's probably Snowden inspired too. So I wanted to talk about the TV show Mr. Robot. It's about Elliot Anderson, played by Rami Malek, who's a whiz kid computer hacker who works for AllSafe, a computer company that's been contracted to do security for E Corp, which in the show is like the biggest mega corporation in the world. It might be Microsoft, or it might be Apple, or it might be Dell. Everyone on the show refers to E Corp as Evil Corp, even the people that work there.
What I'm about to tell you is top secret. There's a powerful group of people out there that are secretly running the world. I'm talking about the guys no one knows about, the guys that are invisible. The top 1% of the top 1%, the guys that play God without permission. And now I think they're following me. Employee number ER280652. Just a regular cybersecurity engineer, but I'm a vigilante hacker by night.
What if you could set in motion the single biggest incident of wealth redistribution in history?
Their networks are getting attacked.
$13 million. That's exactly how much they lost.
Who did this?
One guy. The whole thing comes down.
Oh, hi.
Elliot. Just attacked.
And though Elliot is brilliant, he suffers from depression and anxiety, and he self-medicates with morphine. And two, a lot like Sheldon Cooper on the Big Bang Theory, he might be somewhere on the autism spectrum, but it's like it's left unsaid. It's never addressed. Like the character never like self-identifies that way. And often he relates to other people in the world by sort of hacking into their social media accounts. He sort of violates people's privacy like to relate to them as people because he can't really do it face to face. Elliot's life gets more complicated, even though it was complicated to begin with, when he's recruited by a group of anarchist hackers called F Society. The name F Society can stand for whatever you want it to stand for. So their leader is a nameless, enigmatic hacker played by Christian Slater, who wears a patch that just reads Mr. Robot. So Elliot refers to him as Mr. Robot. Elliot's childhood best friend has been hacked by Chinese hackers because of her D-bag boyfriend. Elliot's drug dealer slash girlfriend works for the King of Sleaze that Elliot can't report to the police because then he would lose his drug hookup. Evil Corp wants to hire Elliot off the book to be a hacker for them. And F Society wants Elliot to take down Evil Corp. The show is great.
Do you think that, yeah, it's kind of amusing how F Society is kind of lifted from Anonymous, like instead of the V for Vendetta masks, they're wearing like Mr. Monopoly masks. full like tuxedo garb. It's kind of amusing.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. I think it's pretty obvious that F Society is modeled after Anonymous. So one criticism of the show is that the character of Elliot is kind of idealized in the show. And actually, even though he's the sort of the anti-hero in the show and the protagonist, he's actually not that nice of a person. Like sometimes his hacking exploits when he tries to do good things end up like with really, really bad things happening to the people that he loves. There's that. And there's also this, this continued like sort of like deification of people with tech skills and whether that's a good or bad idea. And a book that kind of deals with that a little better and is all about privacy is The Circle. And I've talked about The Circle before, probably.
David Eggers?
Yeah.
I like that book.
I probably talked about this during Choose Privacy Week or maybe Banned Books Week. But, you know, in The Circle, there's this idea that Amazon, Google, and Facebook and Apple can all merge into one company called The Circle. And, like, they just surveil everything. But one of the things that book does maybe better than Mr. Robot is that it kind of questions the morality of people like Elliot and whether, you know, the implications of people like Elliot are the people that get to make decisions for everyone in our society. So it was a really interesting book and a really interesting show.
Yeah, there's a video game called Watch Dogs, which you play like a hacker who can hack into anything, including like traffic lights and ATMs and stuff.
Wait, that's an option?
Yes.
I have to learn how to do that.
You can evade the cops, and then on your phone, you can hack the traffic light ahead of you to turn red. So like, or whatever,
like behind,
green.
Like, so, yeah, so you, or whatever, you so want like, to go through.
Or you can like go into alleys and then like hack those concrete like pillars to come up.
The blast things that stop trucks from blowing up buildings because
yeah, so it just pops up, so like the cop car like slams into it and stuff. But
I just want to get home faster.
It's just
at
weird,
night.
Like this is weird that you're technically like playing like the good guy who's like niece has been killed and like you're trying to get revenge or something. Yet like you can hack the personal accounts of literally anybody you walk past. You can like figure out like what they are, like, you know, what their job is, and like they're just random like computer generated people. My favorite is that if you pass a philosophy major, they have no money.
Nice. That would be me.
But one thing about Mr. Robot with that, when I was watching it, and it would occur to me, oh, this is on the USA Network. And mm-hmm. when you look at USA Network shows like White Collar, Covert Affairs, the ones, they're fun. You know, they're kind of like pop. But Mr. Robot is totally different from that lineup. I mean, it has its dark. It's got an edge to it. I mean, you know, where it won't go into some of the stuff it goes into. And they said, they got away with this? I mean, it's pretty shocking.
You know what? I didn't want to bring that up because I don't have spoilers, but there's some stuff I was like, this is pretty hard for cable TV.
Commercial, where they have commercials.
Yeah.
I thought, was this Sprint Cinemax? No, it's USA.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty hardcore. But you know what? The other thought I had when I was watching Mr. Robot was, this is what the new X-Files should have been.
Yeah.
And it wasn't. It wasn't. You know what I mean?
I was very disappointed by the new X-Files.
So
that ending is just...
X-Files was disappointing, but maybe Mr. Robot can make up for it.
I buried the lead again. Mr. Robot might also make up for it because it's basically a tutorial on how to protect yourself on the internet, because it shows all the ways that Elliot can hack people and how easy it is if you're not careful.
So, okay, those are fictional shows, fictional books, fictional video games. If you actually want to take control of your privacy online for real, you can go to the website Surveillance Self-Defense by the Electronic Frontier Foundation. URL is ssd.eff.org, and I love that. That's the funnest URL to say. And there's like really simple, like plain text tutorials that anybody can figure out how to like, you know, control what you share or don't share on the internet. It's a really good site.
Hey, Brian.
What do we do on Tickle My Fancy?
Well, maybe the library has it. Maybe the library doesn't. But either way, it's tickling our fancy.
Mac?
I love what you threw out to yourself.
I know, it's so silly. Just when he thought I would never mention it again, it rises from its grave like Richard Grantham. This week I have Creepshow news. Oh, boy.
Wow, we haven't heard from anyone. Let's hear it.
It's my personal Elvis Costello, Philip K. Dick, Joss Whedon.
Everyone needs one.
Bill's got 70s stuff. Yeah.
Phil's got Walter Hill.
Yeah,
if that makes it in the show.
George Kennedy? I thought you were going to like cry at his grave.
Call back to the cutting room floor.
Hey, I would, dude.
Anyway, both the DVD and Blu-ray editions of Creepshow have no special features because in the U.S. it's a very cult film that only me and Bill and Crystal like. But in Europe, they went all out on the DVD, which includes a feature-length documentary on the making of the movie. I imported this British DVD years ago, but only watched most of it because of reasons I can't get into. But rejoice, listeners! On July 12th, thanks to Indiegogo, the featurette documentary will be released on its own Blu-ray in the United States under the title Just Desserts, The Making of Creepshow.
Fantastic!
Yeah!
Bill just left to go wait in line.
I'm going to pre-order it today. It's got interviews with everybody who's living when they made the documentary. I think it was made a couple years ago, like in 2010, I think. It itself has tons of special features, like multiple commentary tracks and, like, you know, other featurettes and things. And I'm just Totes excites, gang. So is Billy. He's got this big grin on his face. It's great.
I got the gig, man.
Time to pour out a screwdriver and have a slice of Father's Day cake. I'd be.
I was going to ask Paul Hirsch about when I entered, he cut the George Romero segment, very brief. And he in the interview, I was asking about The Fury. And he says, you know, I don't really like horror films. So I thought I better not interview and ask about Creepshow. Man. Anyway, I'm sorry. I had to throw that in.
It's going to be your lost episode. Who cares about this guy now?
Mike's like, ha-ha. Okay, so last year, Mike and I mentioned a new web series on Netflix called The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. Mm. And we were both in love with the show, which is about a young girl named Kimmy, who was kept in an underground bunker in Indiana for 15 years by a deranged religious pastor. And so season one is about what happens when she's released from the bunker and moves to New York City. Now, Kimmy is back for season two.
This is a year-round Christmas store? You must be the happiest woman on earth.
I'm a man.
That's great. Anyway, here's my resume.
Mrs. Voorhees, what are you doing back in New York?
I need your help. What's the hardest thing in the world for a trophy wife to do? Lose the jerk, but keep the perks. Trademark me. Down in the
dim light. I met a really cute guy at a restaurant where I peed.
When are you seeing him again?
I don't know if I'm seeing him again. I didn't do that part.
Kim Basile, what do I always say?
Don't touch my dolls. They're strictly look upons.
Not that.
John Cusack got fat, but I still would.
No. Get the digits. The digits.
All I'm asking for is a chance to get my life back on track.
You're starting therapy today.
I have hope. Hope that got me through 15 years in the bunker.
Bunny and Kitty being best friends. Together forever, the fun never ends. Solving mysteries one hug at a time. Bunny and Kitty, two of a kind.
His name is Douglas, and he's coasting on looks.
YOLO!
You are Mr. Sassafras Jeans today.
Some dumb name for how fierce I'm being.
We're strong, independent women. We're gonna have a choose-your-own-adventure.
Hey, what's nose candy? That sounds harmless.
Did I just watch you do drugs with a junkyard Elmo?
I don't know, but I got a ton of ideas. Let's go to Red Hook with these Morpids and get pregnant!
Ain't nothing get much better than this!
Admittedly, I'm not sure that season two is quite as enjoyable as season one. I felt like some of the shine from season one, like some of the jokes had kind of worn off, but there were still moments that I laughed out loud. It is written and produced by Tina Fey, so you know the one-liners fly right and left. And if you don't listen closely enough, you miss them.
After laughing too hard at one joke, you'll miss like three other ones.
Yeah, and so I tried to do housework while I was trying to paint my house, but I had to stop and sit down and watch because I kept missing. Like, you miss everything, so I had no idea what was going on, so I started over and watched it again. But luckily on Netflix, you can watch it as many times as you want.
Yeah.
My favorite part of the season was when Kimmy becomes an Uber driver, and she keeps having to pick up a very drunk Tina Fey.
Oh, yeah.
And it's revealed that Faye's character, Andrea, is actually a psychologist who, after some drunk persuasion and blackmail, agrees to help Kimmy with her issues. And there's also, towards the end of the season, a very memorable appearance from Jeff Goldblum as a new Dr. Phil TV psychologist wannabe. So there may be a little bit of a sophomore slump here, but season one was so great that even a less than stellar second season is still better than 97.4% of what is on TV. I love Kimmy Schmidt and will watch her forever. Go Hoosiers.
It is amazing. It's got like, it's even got like, you know, character development.
Yeah.
And, like
Titus goes big this season. Like, you get a lot of Titus.
Yeah. He's in a relationship, you know.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing.
I didn't see the details, but I read a headline that said 76% of Netflix watchers said they'd be happy if it replaced TV.
But just Netflix in general, not Kimmy Schmidt.
Well, yeah, I mean, just like if like no more regular TV, just Netflix or like that style of like pay per whatever.
Well, that's what the a la carte, which everyone wants, is like going towards because, you know, people get tired of their cable bill where they're paying for channels they don't want. But now, like, you can stream all these channels.
Yeah, I heard that AT&T and Comcast are trying to put a bill through that if you just use Netflix or Hulu, that they're going to charge you more if you don't use their on-demand. They're going to try but I'm like, that's a monopoly, and y'all are going to just burn in hell. So.
That's why I think that they create, like, data caps in Comcast. And
yeah,
also,
Hulu's
coming out with this thing where you can watch live TV and sports and things for $40 a month.
Wow.
Which is, like, great sports. Who cares? What you got, Bill?
Yes. Well, I'm tickling my fancy. I'm promoting. Sorry. But come to the movies at Maine. Saturday, May 14th, 2016, 2 p.m., Nashville Public Library, downtown, 615 Church Street, to see The Spikes Gang, another movie from the 70s, folks, starring Lee Marvin, Gary Grimes, Ron Howard in an acting role, and Charlie Martin Smith.
Ron Howard, Gary Grimes.
Let's go get lucky! Money! Don't stop!
Driven from their land, they were failures until they met the outlaw, Harry Spikes.
So, you went and robbed yourself a bank, did you?
Lee Marvin, he showed them the ropes.
I'd like to make a withdrawal.
If they caught you, would they hang you?
They cut off my head and stick it on a telegraph pole.
How'd you boys like to throw in?
The Spikes Gang. Soon they were worth a fortune, dead or alive.
What you do is shut your ears and close your eyes and run like hell.
Movie's rated PG. We also have online a interview with the editor of the movie, Frank J. Uriosti. So once again, movies at Maine, May 14th, 2016, 2 p.m., to see the Spikes Gang. The three boys wanted to be like their hero, Harry Spikes. They got their wish. Soon they would be worth a fortune, dead or alive. It's a Western, Ryan. Yeah.
All right. Not tickling my fancy is the fact that Hatsune Miku will not be coming to Nashville on our North American tour. Now,
she's a hologram. Can't she just get beamed in?
I was going to say, now, just pulling that bad boy in.
As you may remember from a previous episode, Hatsune Miku is an anime Vocaloid hologram whose voice you can buy via software and write songs for. I was fascinated by
examples of her songs were sent into space because the Japanese were so enamored with her that they wanted their culture to be out forever in the stars.
Cool. Remember, I was fascinated by her for the copyright implications. So what I learned is that her voice is sold as an instrument. So her voice is not copyright. But if you want to release like books or DVDs with her image on it, like, you know, with the character as an IP, you can't. So if she goes on tour, it's like the company that owns her images. Now, then I found out that there's a record label, Karen T, or that's what it is in English, who actually put out like official like songs by the people that own the IP to her image, but then fans can also just put out their own songs that they make with the software. Fascinating stuff. I think she's mad that Beyonce isn't coming. Okay, so
she says postponed.
So kind of related to this about image and who we are and what's real and what's not is a book that is tickling my fancy so much. That would be Innocence and Others by Dana Spiata. So it's about two young women, Meadow and Carrie, and they grow up together and they both become filmmakers. And it kind of compares and contrasts their lives and careers and the films that they choose to make and the lives that they choose to lead. So Carrie sort of becomes like Nancy Meyers or Tina Fey. She makes mainstream stuff that's smart and critically acclaimed and usually about women's lives. But Meadow goes on to become someone more like Errol Morris or maybe Laura Poitras. So this like sort of documentarian that causes us to question what we think we know or the morality of our lives. So the book is also about the love of movies because the whole way out through their friendship and their careers, there's just these, it's always compared to what movies they're studying or watching at the time. It's just like chocked full of movie history and cinema history and all these references. But it's also about how films and media kind of construct our personality, both artistic cinema and pop culture and TV shows, and also conceptions of beauty and intimacy, in particularly among these two young girls who were growing up in the 1980s. I guess kind of like the left turn of the book is they meet this other woman named Jelly, at least that's her code name, because she's a phone freak who was like a early 80s phone hacker. And she relates to the world through a telephone as opposed to through images on screens. And this totally you know, is a different mode of being than what they're used to, and it's contrasted with their mode. And there's also another character that isn't written a lot about in the reviews, but it's a woman who's in prison for basically manslaughtering her own baby when she was high on drugs. And her version of what her life is like and how she relates to the world is really fascinating and interesting. It's a novel of ideas, and everyone around this table knows that that's the best kind of novel. I think
I cataloged it, and it actually did sound pretty interesting.
I really...
You're selling it to me. Although you probably only read 20 pages and think the rest of it sounds cool.
I loved it. It's about cinema. It's about friendship. It's about art, how art affects our lives. It's about how life imitates art. It's wonderful. And I think, Mike, that you would actually really like it, too. Oh, and cool. Short, if you didn't. So... one thing that, you know, maybe it's kind of bad about it, it is loaded with so many film references that, like, I'm just thinking, like, if you didn't really know the history of European cinema, maybe it wouldn't be as meaningful to you. But I don't know. Like, I got the references. So I'm sort of in that bubble. So it's hard for me to say. But I'm not really sure. This is so kind of, like, the whole thing is, like, just enamored with film. And, like, just to give an example, the first chapter... is like a letter of Meadows' remembrances of when she had an affair with Orson Welles when she graduated from high school. So, and there's all this really beautiful sort of F is for fake callback, because it's questioned later whether she just faked that journal entry that, like, maybe ooh, that never really happened.
Yeah.
And I didn't like it at first either. I loved Dana Spiata, and I was like, I didn't get it. But like most pieces of art that I don't understand at first, like, by the end, it was like, oh, wow, this is something really new and interesting. So people always ask me what authors that I like and who my favorite authors are. And, you know, sort of boiling in this pot of libraries for so long, I'm always kind of nonplussed. Like, I don't know what to say. I'm just, like, overwhelmed, you know? So normally what I do is I just say the authors that Bill and Crystal like. And then that usually works. It works very well in popular materials. So but now, 3 books in a row... that I finished that are amazing. I could say that my favorite writer right now for sure is Dana Spiata. I love her. Eat the Document was amazing. It made my heart explode. Stone Arabia was smaller, pretty good.
I knew that name. Okay, Stone Arabia.
Innocence and Others, amazing. She just keeps, it's a variation on themes that she's obsessed with, the way that we, like, people like us, meaning the people around the table, like, now we have access to, like, all this art, all this music, and all these films that, like, people in the past never had, but we have, like, automatic access to it. That's kind of a theme that keeps coming up over and over again in her work. But structurally and thematically in the characters, it keeps getting more and more interesting. So Dana Spiota, check it out. I have no corrections.
I don't have any corrections.
I don't really have a correction, but I have like an addenda.
Yeah, keep going.
I was just abused. I didn't have time to mention that my mom, in addition to showing me the classics, also showed me the classic oeuvre of Arnold Schwarzenegger. I can still remember.
Moms do.
When she, it's interesting. When I grew up and found out that not all women like horror films and Arnold Schwarzenegger movies. And
that's true.
Kind of a bummer, but you know, I can still remember when she showed me Predator. Right. She's like, Mike, you're gonna love this.
Sidebar, you know, they're doing Kindergarten Cop 2, yeah. Not with Arnold.
What,
the new guy?
New guy,
I'm still not a Tuma.
Yeah, some of his later movies have been quite good, actually. The one where he was a sheriff,
I was about to say, that one is actually, that was good. I liked it. It was kind of a commercial for the car, but other than that, like, I thought it was good. Johnny Knoxville was as annoying as I thought it'd be.
I like Johnny Knoxville.
Sabotage
was that one.
Atlanta.
And then Last Stand or something?
Or The Last Outpost or something of that nature. Or it might be The Last Stand.
Yeah.
For more info about Jackass, you can go to
www.library.nashville.org.
No, the music is by
Adam Dean.
You can subscribe to the Popmatic Podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or RSS. Next week,
comedy. Tonight.
Take my wife, please. is there a week where you wouldn't choose privacy? You know, so like exhibition week. You could be like those performance artists who live in those, like, was there a woman who lived in like Lima for a year in like a glass box?
There have been a couple that have lived in like museums. Like they're part of the installation and like you just watch them like go about their day.
What's that? The horror movie where like one night a year you're allowed to go around and kill
the Purge.
The Purge. So it's like The Purge, but with privacy.
Clothes optional.
I don't know what
it is. See, the thing about The Purge is that they say that all crime is legal. So I'm like, I would just rob banks. Like, why does it have to be murder? You know, I'd like tear the tag off the couch cushion. Take that.
I think it's the return.
Mattress tag going down.
Yeah, that's right. Now I can't sell it again. Yeah. Except on The Purge day.
No one would buy it anyway. It's a nasty mattress with all your skin cells in it.
You don't know what I do on a mattress.
It's pristine. I still have the plastic cover on it.
Yeah.
You know what I liked about the first Purge was when it came out. I think it came out the week of these two big I know one was The Legend of the Lone Ranger and some other big Hollywood movie, and it just kicked its butt. You know, both of them.
I thought the second one was really good.
Little bitty movie, you know, when it just
have there been
that was
three,
the thing I really loved.
They're coming out with a third one.
That's I saw previews for one of them when I was at the movie first. I'm like, I'm not watching that. It's
supposed to be very satirical on our current
it's
election.
It's going
to
be awesome.
Yeah.
You can have it.
You know, same thing with the second one. I'm totally there.
I'm not.
It's called like Purge Election Year, I think.
Yeah. I think that's the one I saw the preview. It's, it's the chick from Lost.
Yes,
Mitchell.
Elizabeth. I was going to say Elizabeth Banks.
And
I knew
and
that
Frank Grillo's coming back. Cool. Really great in the second one. But yes, the second one was better.
I'm excited about Neon Demon.
Yeah.
I'm not going to watch that one either.
I'm not sure. I thought Drive was overrated. Oh!
Drive was challenging. And I like that.
But I would recommend watching Walter Hill's crime, The Driver.
The Driver is awesome.
Yeah.
I watched that a couple of years ago. I was like, this is amazing. Drive tried to like basically remake this and failed.
Yeah, that's what I kind of thought when I was watching Drive.
Yeah, that's why I watched it, because I read a review and they were like, this is just basically a remake of The Driver. And I'm like, and I watched The Driver and I was like, whoa.
Okay, the challenge has been thrown. I'm curious if this is a remake of The Driver, because I haven't seen the Driver yet, but I know the kind of
the bits that you like about Drive will not be present in The Driver.
Exactly. So that's
Even bother.
Well, that's why it's hard.
Come back to us and be like, this is just genre garbage, you dummies.
Well, this is why it's really hard for me to be like, it's a remake of The Driver. Anyway,
The Driver is Walter Hill.
I'm not saying that it's bad.
Argument over.
Uh-oh, bills are down.
Yeah.
I'm not saying
that. Say it, the bill.
But Nicholas Winding Refn.
I'm not saying that it's bad.
I would say it's
when I was 17.